out of the darkest time of the night. The fifth and the sixth hours are the kind of the deepest places of the descent into the duat. And in this transitional hour, this fifth hour, which comes before the fifth gate, which is the gate of judgment, there's a whole set of processes that happen that cause us to change our identity or to reframe our identity. And I'll talk more about this after this afternoon. But one of the key pieces of, if we look at what we were looking at last in the previous hour, in the fourth hour, we're looking at the digestion of time, learning to work with time as a dimension of awareness, and learning therefore to work with our own timeline, with our own experiences of life. And anyway, is this process of purification, of transformation, where we descend into the lake, we arise as the risen one, we, like the serpent called rope, we digest the hours, we move backwards through our life, whatever way we do that, digesting our experience, making it new again. But it's made new again through digestion. The difficult things that have happened to us as we contemplate them, they start to lose their energetic resonance, but they become incorporated into us. So it's also a process of healing, splitting and healing, and working with the quality of opposites inside ourselves. Now this work that we were looking at really in the fourth hour is deepened really in the fifth hour. Because one of the things you get in the fifth hour, we've worked with a serpent called rope. Now a lot of the figures in the fifth hour are literally working with ropes or snakes that are like ropes. I'll go over it in detail a bit this afternoon, but the work that we have begun in the fourth hour now starts to really deepen in the fifth hour. Having engaged with the serpent called rope, we now start to hold the serpent in the top register of the fifth hour. We have a lot of figures holding a rope that is both straight and spiral. And in a way, this image that I've used a lot with you over time, of the image of the straight and the spiral, which is this image of repeating patterns and that sense of timelessness that cuts through all the repeating patterns. So as we work with the rope that is both spiral and straight, one of the things that this talked about in the fifth hour is that we are given a measure, a length of rope, which measures out for us a place in the duat that is ours, that in a sense is our garden. This measurement, this rope that is given to us as a result of our activities in helping Ra move through the underworld. Now what that means in practice, not in a mythical thing, is this place where we continually become present and align ourselves with our creative energies and the creative energies of the universe, is we aid the universe to keep moving in balance. And it is that practice really of presence, that practice of the steady moment by moment, working with both the positive energies and the negative energies, that creates for us, if you like, a foundation, a place that is ours, the garden, the inner garden that is ours. And that's what's meant really by the sort of the rope shape, the measurement that we are given. In the middle register, there's a whole in the text, they talk a lot of being established in our strength and in our ability to tow the boat of Ra. So there's an emphasis, there's a subtle changing emphasis in this fifth hour of looking at ourselves as those who work with the creative energies of the universe. And in another register of the hour, we're also working with a snake, with the energy of Apophis, the energy of the snake, that is trying to stop the creative energy of the universe. And I'll show you some pictures about that, because the people who are whole working with the snake, the snake is actually passing through their bodies, and they are holding the snake in their body. And in a way, that's part of the process that happens when we work with unbalanced energies. We remain balanced in our bodies, balanced in our presence, and we literally hold the energy. We allow our embodiment to seize hold of that energy of distortion and stay with it. It's that difficult thing where you have to learn to stay with difficulty, stay with pain, stay with frightening things. But by staying and holding it, you develop the stamina to be with that quality until it transforms. Another image you find in the... Jenny, sorry, you waved a hand. Jenny, did you say that? Jenny, you're on mute, so I can't hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Can I hear you now? Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
What you've just said there, is that... connected with how I feel so overwhelmed. I'm finding this so physically difficult, and in the meditations this week, the jerking on my spine it's like it's too much, and when you're talking now, I feel overwhelmed. So what you've just said, is it just because I'm trying to incorporate those energies?
I think so, and I'd encourage you just to lean back a little bit, really. I think you may be trying a bit too hard. So relax a little bit. I think, but yes, that is the experience, right? So the experience of incorporating these energies, of course, pushes us. So that sense of, you know, Jess was talking about compression. So that sense of as we move more deeply inwards, that yes, it can feel very, very physical sometimes. So then,
I don't feel like I'm trying hard.
Okay.
It just happens.
Okay, so then lean back a bit.
Right.
So when that intensity happens, then just come back away from it a little bit. There's a real art, really, in working with this stuff. So actually, if we get too much into it, it does get to feel over intense. So and that's why that image, you've got that image, you know, this powerful image, really, of working with holding a serpent, holding and so you imagine that kind of ability a serpent has to wriggle or to bite on us, you know. So there's something about, okay, lean back a bit, and just let your sort of, if you like, let that sense of, by leaning back, getting that sense of the bigger field helping you to hold the disturbing energies.
Yeah, what I ended up doing in the meditations this week was I just end up lying on the floor.
Yeah.
Like in, curled up on the floor.
Yeah.
So maybe that was a good thing.
Yeah, that was a good thing. That was a good thing, totally. Yeah, exactly. So you do it in, that's a really good idea. So doing it in such a way that you feel that sense of comfort, that sense of holding, which then helps you to hold.
Yes.
Right, that's because in even in the book of the Gates, you do this as a representative of Ra. You're doing this as someone who, you're not doing it in your own, just in your own personality. You're letting the sort of, you like the deeper presence, the soul presence or the divine presence, hold you as you hold the energies, and as you work with the energies. Yeah.
Allowing Hatha to hold me.
Yes, that's right. Exactly. So yes. Very, very important, this, in letting Hatha hold you, so then that you hold.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Thank you.
No. So there's a lot of in this hour. There's a lot of this thing about working with opposites. The other thing you find in the lower register is you find a twisted rope in this case that's made that that that. It, that that is about the twisting, the bringing together of opposite energies to create a rope that's even stronger than a single strand rope. So this is the idea of working with, as you know, when Faye was talking about working with the unbalanced energies and this idea of innocence and experience, it's working, it's taking the opposites in that way and working with them so that they form something coherent. And in that, they start to create a new sense of momentum. The hieroglyphs that are found in the people holding the double rope is the hieroglyph for lifespan, and that's formed out of two hieroglyphs. One that is a little round circle that is the threshing floor, where wheat is ground into flour, and the hieroglyph above that is a masthead, which is like the mast of a ship. So what the hieroglyph of lifespan is conveying there is a process of like the transformation of bread, of wheat into bread, but through the threshing floor, through these difficult processes of being ground down. And then the masthead gives us this idea of the ship and the sail that now goes off on a new path. So there's a lot. So I'm going to go through these things in detail through the weekend. But as a sort of a general kind of sense, this hour is, if you like, a deepening into the work that you were doing in the previous hour, where you are looking at lifespan, looking at memory, looking at working with time as a dimension of consciousness, and working with that more consciously and more deeply. And in particular, there's a sense of the presence of Hathor here, who is our companion and helper. I mean, the Anpu is still with us, Anubis is still with us, helping us to guide us in detail. But also we've got the presence of Hathor, who is the container. The word Hathor means the house of Horus, or the container of Horus. So she is this presence who contains us and helps us as we are in ourselves doing this work of containment and working with the inner energies. The other thing word that's used a lot coming up to in this hour and coming up to the fifth hour is the idea of judgment. Now judgment, it's interesting sometimes how some of these ideas have developed in the West. Now judgment in ancient Egyptian tradition doesn't have the same implication that it has in a Judeo-Christian society, where we have this image of the last judgment and the idea of people being thrown into the pit of fire or taken into heaven. Now the whole idea of judgment in an ancient Egyptian sense is that it is a process of transformation through which the unbalanced parts of ourselves are recycled. So the idea that when Faye is talking about being purified, these places are not just put away, they are literally recycled. Now in the book, the judgment scene, the Book of Kates is a different judgment scene, which I'll talk about in a second, but in the book of the dead you have this scene where the heart is weighed against the feather of Ma'at, the feather of truth, and sitting at the foot of the scales is a figure called Ammit, who is part crocodile, part hippopotamus. So in a way, two of the most frightening animals that the Egyptians come across. And it said that the heart that doesn't pass the test of the scales is given to Ammit to eat. Which sounds really similar to the kind of Christian idea of being damned, but as an inner process, what that means is the barred heart, the diseased heart, is eaten and recycled. So that there is a sort of a giving away. There's a giving away of yourself, of the parts of yourself that are unbalanced, into this process of digestion. And then, as a result of that process of digestion, the heart then becomes balanced, becomes true, a true heart, and then you are led into the presence of the god Osiris, who in a sense represents your own deeper spirit, your deeper soul. And then a whole other set of things happen. Now, in the Book of Gates, the process is different. There's no Amit, because the processes of transformation are already implicit. What you find in the fifth gate, which we'll deal with next month in detail, is the person presents themselves before the throne of Osiris as a living pair of scales. There's a little human being with two scales either side. So the implication in the Book of Gates version of the judgment is that you become balanced, and you present yourself as the balanced being to Osiris. And just going to show you a scene from the Crowley tarot card adjustment. Now, if you just look at this image for a moment, this is the human being as the living pair of scales. If you look at the top, you see the figure has got has a solar crown, little solar big crown there, and then these two plumes of Ma'at, the plumes of truth. And if you look down at the bottom, it's like rather like a ballet dancer. The adjustment figure is standing on tiptoe. So this is a sense of balance and centeredness, but is also there's a lot of will and focus here. And if there's here, you've got the alpha and the omega. We've got this sense of the opposites being held. And we've got this kind of, we've also got this sense of wings on either side. So you've got this sense of opposites together. We've got this sense of, we've got in the middle of it, we've got this sword. So we've got this sense of energetic focus and the sense of the middle pillar. So we've got this kind of diamond-like shape, really, which is the figure is rather like a harlequin, who is a kind of a jester figure. It's a kind of figure of the fool. That you find in the tarot. So this is like the other side of the fool. So on one side, the fool is this wild kind of creative kind of figure, but the other side of the fool is this very focused figure who is sort of balanced and is working with the opposites. So that's part of the quality, really, that we're going to be looking at this week, weekend. So just look for a moment at that card, and just see what it does to you as you look at it, and just shout out you know what comes to you.
I don't like it. It's too mechanical. I don't like these chains.
The chains.
Mm. Don't like it.
The chains worry me. Chained up.
It reminds me of the devil.
Actually, the figure is not chained. The figure, if you look at it, the chains are hanging from the crown. So the figure is carrying the scales, but the movement, if you look where the arms are, that's not wrapping around the body of the person at all.
It feels very anchored to me. The image, mm-hmm. It's like an anchor in itself. Yeah. But it's interesting that the top.
Yeah,
it feels more weighted than the bottom. So at the bottom, the feet are touching very lightly and lifting.
That's right.
And at the top, there's this pretty hefty compression mechanism to hold everything.
That's right. So you've got this again. You've got these opposites, right? So you've got that sense of lightness and at the bottom, you know, and it's opposite in the way you'd expect it. Mm-hmm. Right, so the weight is at the top, the lightness is at the bottom.
The weight's taken from above, not from the figure, isn't it?
So yeah.
It's being held by you said these plumes of truth almost are holding the.
That's right, and that's the paradox, right? These plumes, if these little feathery things, are holding all the weight.
I don't like the dark, spiky things and all the kind of lines. It feels a bit too heavy or strong, or it kind of brings a kind of
piercing
darkness. Piercing, yeah. It feels a bit sinister.
Mm-hmm.
What are they anyway, these forms?
What?
I actually really like it. I like it a lot.
No, I do. It's one of my favourite plants.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
I like the way we're looking at our colonial past and things, and here's and how do we shed the light of truth on actually what we are?
Yeah.
And there's difficulty in holding that past, isn't there? And that's a bit like those chains and those opposites. But that is the truth. We don't. When the truth isn't. It's what it is. It's not some story we're being told. It's being real with what's happened in ourselves, in our history. And I love those hands in the center there. They seem really very centered and holding a real stillness there.
Yeah.
I was going to say, there's such a sense of discipline in it. It's like a very disciplined figure.
Yeah, very much so.
But it
has
this potential to just sort of go... shirk it all off suddenly.
Yeah.
And it's also masked.
Yeah.
It's got something over...
Yeah.
As if it's sort of kind of conveying a very sort of disciplined holding of truth, and yet the potential to completely... subvert that.
Yeah, totally. Because it's a harlequin figure. You know, a harlequin figure in a carnival is like a jester figure. You know, it's like the fool. So it can shift shape, and you've got the harlequin at the top of the card. You've got the kind of diamond pattern that you get with a harlequin. Because that's what the harlequin is hinted at inside this, really.
It seems to me like an androgynous figure.
Yes, very much so.
Whether it's male or female.
Yeah, exactly.
And there is that, although it looks very static, because she is balancing in that very precise way, it almost feels that could move.
Yeah.
She could twist, she could twist around.
Yeah.
On that little axis and move in various directions. And in actual fact, it feels like she could at any point lift up that sword.
Yeah, this one.
And there could be movement. And I quite like the contrast between the angularity and the circles, the bubbles.
Yeah, exactly.
As well.
Yeah.
You know, the opposites in that too. So
yeah.
So it's intriguing.
No, it's a figure of dynamic balance, right? So the idea of a balance here, an idea of Murat, is that it's not static. So this looks static, but actually as we start to engage with it, actually it starts to come to life. We get repelled by things, we get attracted by things, and you can just see this combination of opposites.
So that's that part of it too, is that it repels and attracts.
Yeah.
And also it looks very metallic to me.
Yeah.
Metal in it.
Yeah, it's not very organic looking, is it? But a lot of course there are feathers and things there, so there's the implication, and in the greenness there is the implication of the organic, but that's an implication. It's not a sort of florid kind of thing.
There are those hands. They're very.
Yeah.
It's this tiny head. Is really inward looking, and that draws you in, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The fact that the figure is not looking out at you, I mean, it's facing you, not looking out at you, it's completely, it's an image of perfect poise, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
Poison.
Right, so I could see it as a sort of a place that one would really like to, I think I've just got there in a way. Oh, this is the inner place within me that I could find.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
flying,
right.
Aren't you? Just
yeah.
Rather than seeing as an outside.
It feels to me like it's the other side of what I was earlier on.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think for me, I don't like the sort of dark, piercing things because I find it difficult to face all the kind of negative things in the world, and I get overwhelmed and my own negative experiences, and I'm kind of like, I kind of want to hide away from it all. So it's quite challenging to have to kind of face it.
But those things in their poison balance, they echo the balance of the figure, don't they, really?
Yeah, they do, yeah, they do.
And also, in the fact that there are four of them, all the figure is standing forward to them, but it's almost like they're the little temple, you know, the four-square temple that would hold this.
That's right. So these things can be that, right? So that sense of sharpness, it's our own, you know, it's a lot to do with our own perception, our own clarity of presence, and which does help, because the whole point about this, if you like, the whole dynamic really is it's all held by the plumes of truth, right? So the whole and it is about the working of the sword. So it is about that energy of clarity and focus, so that you work with unbalanced energies. And in a way, it's about freeing from chains. You know, the sword there could cut through things and make things clear. It's that aspect of our awareness that doesn't back away from, that can see, as Rob said, things like colonialism, and things in our own personal history that enable us to see and therefore bring that into a different sense of balance within us.
Yeah. And the sword is will as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. That's right.
With will.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Absolutely.
What about the coiling ones? Are these spheres meant to be part of that, do you think?
Sorry, Andy, what the...
Well, we'd be dealing a lot with swords and float and spirals, and I'm just wondering, are the spheres representing some sort of spiral? I don't know, I'm just trying to sort of put it together.
Don't think they quite make a spiral here in the way they've got there, but they are representing... It's the difference between the spherical and the angular. Right, so we've got arcs, you know, there's four, if you like, there's a lot of balance. If you look at the four in each of the corner of the card, there are these four arcs, and then there are four spheres at the bottom, four spheres at the top. So there's a lot of stuff here, and then there's the angular pointy things, right? So there's not so much the spiral in this, but it's that sense of the spherical and the angular. The straight and the curved.
Yes.
Right, so that's part of the kind of...
Complete in a way. A sphere is complete.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you know what I find really hard about it? And I think it's a reflection of myself. It just feels as though the individual or whatever is just carrying everything. And there doesn't seem to be... I know there just doesn't seem to be any sort of support there. I mean, I know they're doing it, but it's like, surely, you know, we need to open up to the bigger support, and maybe it's a recurring theme, this sort of sense of just carrying. I mean, you've got these great balls, heavy balls, and being trapped and held. I think that's my instinctive reaction to it.
It's interesting because the figure isn't carrying the balls. If you just again look at it.
I know, it's just the balls being there and above the shoulders and also, yes, I don't know what that structure is behind, but it seems obviously part of whatever they're doing. It's part of the concept. Yeah.
Because the chains look as though they're hanging off the feathers at the top of its head. How will we call it, this being anyway? that's why it could look heavy for me.
True, no, okay. No, it's a complex thing, right? Because of course it does evoke ideas of heaviness, and then we have to see here that it's the feathers of truth that are holding it. So it's impossible, you know. If you literally, this couldn't work, could it? You couldn't wrap a chain around feathers; the feathers would fall down. But actually, that's what's holding.
I can't see the feathers. Where are they?
There they are.
They're stylized.
Stylized, right?
They're stylized.
So they go up there, so they're like ostrich feathers. They go up there.
Very stylized.
That's one. That's another.
The thing of Egypt, there. Is it?
It's the feathers. These are the way the feathers of Maat are symbolized in ancient Egypt. Right, in that shape. So then what you see just there is that that's where the chains are wrapped around, and it's the feathers that are holding the opposites, that are holding the chains and the bowls. It's not the person themselves.
So what's the piece coming from the top of the figure's head up to where the feathers are held with that ball there?
Well, the ball there is the sun disk, it's the crown. And that there is nothing coming up. That's the space in between the two feathers.
Oh, okay. Right.
So that's the edge of one feather. That's the edge of another feather.
Wonderful that it's ostrich feathers, because it's even less likely to work than any other feather.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
It's
not going to work, is it? No. And you see, then you've got this interesting, this fourfold structure, spiky structure with balls. And again, if you look at it, it's just around the person. But of course, it does promote that kind of image of him. So we've got this sort of sense of opposites, and maybe being imprisoned, or maybe not. So these are the things that are conjured up. Now, in the tower, this card is a direct analog to the fool card. So I'm going to show you the Crowley fool card just in a moment. So just stop the share there, and I'll just have to bear with me just a second. And I find the fool card. Where's it gone? Where's it gone then? Yeah, there we go. Okay, so I'm just going to go back into share screen. Do that. Do that. Okay. So the Jasper card is also the Harlequin, is also the fool figure. So the other side of the card you've been looking at is this card. So again, just look at it, and then just see what comes to you as you look at it.
This one's got very big feet compared to the other one.
It has.
And they're spread out.
Yeah, they are.
They're not standing on tiptoes, they're standing on their heels.
Yeah.
And it's really organic, and it's got lots of movement and circles and organic things in it, the butterflies and tigers.
Yeah.
More life.
It's grapes, but I always see it as frog spawn.
It could be that, it could also be frog spawn, yeah.
Yes.
There's money there as well.
Mm. Whoa.
Hmm?
It's
money with symbols, isn't it?
There's the zodiac, is there?
Yeah.
In the eight, they make a diamond shape, which is in the right hand of the figure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's the opposite stance, isn't it? Instead of being contained, it's completely open, this figure.
Totally. That's why it's an opposite from the other card. That's why the two together. Really,
it's almost like the animalistic part of the self that isn't using the will or whatever to channel, because you've got this kind of like piggy nose and horns, and it's this kind of I don't know whether that's right, but that's what I'm getting.
It's the dove of peace, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got the dove there.
I get
sense, the adjustment is much more feminine than this one. It's like that is the female for me, and yeah. this one is masculine, even though there's almost a sense of breasts on the fall.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Is it just my mind, or is there something quite amusing between the legs, all these stylized flowers? It's probably just my peculiar imagination.
No?
We won't go there. Yes, it just looks weird having that between the legs.
It does.
Straight
things. I think it's meant to, isn't it?
I think definitely meant to.
The sun as well, right, the Tiferet sun is right over the genital
area. Yeah, it is, yeah.
Then is this a baby or is it a copulating couple underneath?
Well, it could be both, couldn't it?
Lots of arms and legs and things, yeah.
That's right.
And you've got the flow on it, like the other one was all lines, and now you've got this kind of flow of energy, more...
Yeah, snake.
It's like the snake is in this one, not in the last one. And the crocodile, is it
yeah.
a crocodile?
Yeah, crocodile there, yeah.
And the tiger biting the leg.
Yeah.
The thing that's interesting is if you feel like if you were hanging out with the first figure in adjustment, you'd be very careful and good. But if you're hanging out with this guy, you'd be very careful that he wasn't going to take you astray.
That's right, yeah. It's quite wild. Yeah, it's quite a wild figure, isn't it?
It's got a sort of, has it a thing of corn in the top right-hand corner?
Could be corn. I think it's also fire, so there's kind of always... It could be corn, could be fire, could be both, yeah, hard to tell.
It's got the Caduceus with the snake.
Caduceus, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
In a spiraling Caduceus, in a state of movement.
Yeah, that's right. So here we do find the spiral, right? So much more in the other card, you find the straight line. Here you absolutely find spirals within spirals.
Mm. And what's the significance of that then?
Well, the whole thing about it's again, we're looking at opposites. We're looking at, so in that first, in the other adjustment, you're looking at focus, you're looking at clarity, you're looking at containment, you're looking at holding, you're looking at sharpness, sharp edges. Here you're looking at that other aspect of life, of where things are fluid and mysterious, repeat themselves, and sometimes don't know where you're going because something you seem to be going in a, you know, partly you could imagine him running forward or doing something because the tiger's just bitten him on the bum, you know, and it's that part of life where you find yourself doing things and you don't know why you're doing them and seeming to react to things, but actually the implication here is there's a much bigger field going on somewhere.
This figure's free of convention.
Yeah, totally.
Other figures, sorry, withdrawn. This one is totally in the world because we've got all the four elements there.
Yeah.
So it's sort of leaping into the world, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the known world, yeah.
He's having all the full experiences of life, isn't he, in every kind of aspect.
Yeah, totally.
Kind of innocence.
Yeah.
They don't look innocent to me. But there's the dove and the butterfly.
Then I suppose there's an innocence and then life kind of happens, so it's being bitten and all this stuff is sort of happening and it's been swept along in this kind of whatever's going on.
Well, he looks at his face, he looks as if he's in some sort of drug trance, doesn't he? You know, with these staring eyes and this strange expression. It's just like he's taking everything in without discernment.
That's right.
Just open to all sensation.
Absolutely. That's right.
We are looking out as opposed to the other card. Yeah, everything's looking out.
That's right. The other card is looking inward, isn't it? It's much more contained. This is a opening out, embracing, grabbing hold of things.
It doesn't wear a suit and tie.
Definitely doesn't wear a suit and tie. He definitely doesn't.
This is how we more are at the beginning as we start life, and then.
Well, it can be like that, can't it? We learn to discipline ourselves, maybe. But I guess what Tukart is saying is that we need both of these qualities, right? These are this. You know, senses of innocence and experience that Blake talks about, where you, so we, and one of the dangers of life is we lose touch with the fullness of this figure. But if we're just this figure, if we don't also have the capacity to hold and contain and to focus, something else gets missed. You know, so it's like almost these cards being two sides of ourselves, really, that need cultivating.
But they're extremes, I mean, in a sense.
Yeah, but because of extremes, they hold out, they show the kind of, in some ways they show of the power of the energies that we're working with. Because we're working somewhere with this full-on pressure of life. We're also working with this capacity to really hold and bring things into balance.
Quite like the gender blending of this character.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? Yeah, it is. I mean, again, both figures are interesting. Both figures have an androgynous sense about themselves. The one's inclined in one direction and the other in another direction. So there's a more masculine kind of feel about, classically masculine feel about this card. Although when you look more deeply, you see really is androgynous. You see the breasts there. Whereas the other card initially has a sort of a more feminine appearance, but again, as you look more deeply at that, you see that isn't necessarily true. So there's again a whole thing as well about appearance and reality, and because as you look more deeply into these images, they become more and more mysterious in some ways, and you start to see this interplay of the opposites within the card as well as between the two cards.
Because people think whether or not they like the previous one, I just want to say I find this very energetic but very jarring.
Oh yeah, totally. No,
that
yeah.
One was
yeah.
Very, you know, yeah. I like a lot.
Yeah, Penny, I kind of agree. I was just going to ask that question about whether you feel affinity for one card or the other. Does that reflect your own internal state? But I would say that the former card, the adjustment card, I felt more comfortable with than this one.
Yeah.
I just find this a bit really in your face.
Oh, it really is. No, it totally is. He's right. He's right there, isn't he? He's completely coming towards you.
This is an extrovert, and the other one was more introverted.
Yeah.
I feel much more comfortable with the previous one.
Yeah.
I'm also wondering what's going on with this dove, because these marks, it's as if it's falling out of the sky.
Yeah.
As if it's been struck out, struck with a stone or something.
Well, you see, sort of leaping forward, right? I mean, that's the image of it, I think, and that's the idea of him almost coming out of the card towards us or coming down towards us. He's sort of, again, it's that sense of movement, right? There's enormous movement here, you know, and you know, in some other images of the fool, you get the fool at the tower backs on the edge of a cliff, whether he's going to jump off or not. Here he's jumped, so he's like he's jumping towards you, bringing all this stuff somewhere, really.
I love it. I find him really infectious, and he's unpredictable and infectious. You don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Almost one's out of balance and the other is perfectly in balance, and neither good or bad, but both are needed.
That's right.
This one reminds me of my last partner.
Oh yes, Peter. Oh yes, I could see that, Andy, from the things you've told me about him. Yes, of course. Isn't that interesting? Interesting.
Do you have this on, as you're looking at it on the left side, there's a thing that looks almost like looks like cellophane, looks like a veil.
There.
Partial occlusion. Is that?
Yeah.
What it's supposed to be?
Yes, I think it is. I think it's like a veil that's been pierced, right? It's a veil that the veil's been pulled back. Here you are, unveiled. Here he is, right? Completely unveiled.
So is it some sort of reference to that virginal?
Yes.
State.
Yes. Yeah.
That feels quite birthy, that feel.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, exactly. Same sort of thing.
Quite
what?
Quite birthy.
Birthy, right, yes, coming, yes,
we get that. It looks capable of destruction as well.
Yeah, disturbance for sure, yeah, totally.
And And the nose, the fact that the nose, I don't know what it looks like. Is it a pig?
It does look like a pig's nose, isn't it? Yeah. But it's yeah, so quite animalistic and quite cool. Like that.
It's on the wild side, isn't it, perhaps?
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
It's quite a bit of the poem, this, you know, one night a wild god came visiting, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, total authenticity and total pain and destruction and, but also renewal of life.
Yeah, exactly that. That's right, yeah. I'm going to show you one more image, and then very briefly, we're not going to talk because we need a break for lunch, but I'm just going to show you one final image. So I'll just come out of that. Bear with me. Where's he gone? Not that one. Oh, here we go. Seven. Ouch.
Hey.
He was a bit of a weird guy, Aleister Crowley, wasn't he?
He was in a way quite brilliant. Because the thing about these cards are the dynamism, right? The images are and they're disturbing, right? That's the other thing about the Crowley cards that I like, is they disturb us. They wake us up a bit, and you have to really look at them. Whereas it was some of the other cards, there's other tarot packs I like as well, but this has a real disturbing quality about it. So again, you see a lot of movement here. He's juggling. So he's juggling these things. He's got he's also like a tightrope walker. And he's got these kind of winged kind of feet. And so this card, in a way, is a sort of, not quite a synthesis, but it's sort of somewhere between the other two cards.
Certainly feels a lot more comfortable than the other two, and I like this one very much.
So I want to ask you now, there's in the original tower there were three Megases.
There were, yeah.
So do they have, do you know why this one particular?
He decided this one was the best one because she did. You could imagine working with Aleister Crowley. He was not going to be easy for any artist because he kept rejecting things. So she ended up having to create three Meguses, and then he settled on this one as most occupying the kind of territory he wanted to depict, really. And what's interesting here, this is one of the things that get lost often. If you look on the right hand corner, there's a baboon.
Yeah.
And this baboon in ancient Egypt is the ape of Thoth. So this card is also an image of Thoth, the ibis god, and the ape of Thoth has all kinds of meanings. But the whole figure really is him and him, light and shadow. And that's the thing. So he is this figure juggling, walking the tightrope, walking with the opposites. But at the same time, we've got this kind of figure, which is sort of seems, looks like it's shaking a fist towards him or trying to clamber towards him. We don't quite know what it's doing.
Salute, couldn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Black Lives Matter salute.
It could be that as well. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. That's right.
Could be swinging up on that line, couldn't he?
Could definitely be doing that as well, right? So there's again this sense of balance, working with things, working with lines, working with opposites. You've got this juggling thing here, right? Where he's juggling the energies of life. So there's a cup. He's juggling with a cup. There's a sort of dagger. There's a fiery sword. There's a wand. There's a winged egg. You know, so he is this kind of figure, and of course he's crowned with serpents and wings.
Mm.
So there's you know, these three cards really cover a lot of the territory that we're going to be looking at this weekend. So we need to stop to come to some of you to have some lunch. So we'll come back. So I'll leave that card up there. So. we come back at 1:30 and we'll see where that takes us. Have a nice lunch.
Thank you.
And I'll see you at 1:30. Okie dokie. Bye bye.
Bye bye.